A Wednesday Lenten Sermon by Reverend Richard A. Rem, preached at Christ Community Church in Spring Lake, Michigan, on March 13, 2002, from the series The Grace to Let Go, entitled Of the Need to Control and Dominate. The texts for the sermon are Romans 12, verses 14 through 18, and Romans 13, verses 1 through 7, and Luke 22, verses 39 through 53. Copyright, Grand Valley State University. Please note that the original recording spanned two sides of a cassette tape, so there is some missing material. I will bridge the gap.
On this final Wednesday evening of our Lenten season, I would remind you that we have symbolized the theme, the grace to let go, by the open hand, the extended hand. Not just a limp rag, but an offer, an open hand, bespeaking grace and openness and a kind of relaxed posture over against life. In contrast to the clenched fist, which in the clenching of it tenses our body, a clenched fist, which is an instrument, a defensive instrument, and a destructive instrument. And so we have been looking at the grace or the gift to be able to let go as death approaches, in the raising of our children, of the need to win, of begrudging obedience, the grace to let go of control and domination, and tonight of violence. The grace to let go of violence. And we've been focusing on personalities of the passion, more or less as a takeoff, a launching pad for our reflections together. Tonight, Judas Iscariot, one of the 12, the only non-Galilean, Judas, who was the one who betrayed Jesus with a kiss, as we read a moment ago, having gone to the authorities for a very modest sum, agreed to lead them to Jesus. Leading them to Jesus in the Garden of Gethsemane, only to have one of the disciples take up the sword and strike a servant of the high priest. And then to hear Jesus say, no more of that. And so you've come out with clubs and spears. I was in the temple day by day teaching, and you didn't take me. But this is the hour of darkness. So let's get on with it, so to speak. The grace to let go of violence. The little incident in the garden, whether historical or not, the disciple not named, taking the sword, striking the servant of the high priest, seems rather unrealistic, seems rather unlikely, doesn't it? For here was a little band gathered around Jesus, over against the temple police, no doubt with reinforcements at the ready. But the story is an occasion to highlight Jesus' spirit and attitude, a spirit and attitude that he had taught in the Sermon on the Mount, where he counseled against murder, which was anger, or anger, which was already murder in the hatching of it, against violent reaction, a posture of nonviolent resistance, turning the other cheek, going the extra mile, culminating with that call to love one's enemies, pray for those who persecute us. That totally unrealistic, totally unnatural Sermon on the Mount that can be so distressing and so confusing if we take it seriously. And in the arrest in the garden, just one more incident of Jesus' nonviolent behavior. He had the grace to let go of violence, a violence that's written deeply into the fabric of our being, a violence that is reflective of that long evolutionary climb that emerges from the jungle existence. I have in recent weeks been speaking about on Sunday mornings the human one and the fact that the revelation of God in Jesus is that God is human and that we are called to be human, that we are not human, that we are subhuman, that we are prehuman, that we are advanced primates. Somebody suggested to me that that's an insult to the primates. Probably so. But Jesus, in the posture of nonviolence, holds out for us an ideal, a mood, a spirit, which is simply contrary to that which is most deeply rooted in the core of our being. We are violent creatures. That's how we survived. And we continue to have that violence seething just below the surface. Just scratch us, huh? Just back us into a corner. And it's one thing in the personal dimension, in the daily experiences of all of us, but of course it's another thing in the international scene and the world in crisis as we experience it today. The grace to let go of violence, my goodness. It's a huge subject. It's a very complex subject. Anybody that has it all worked out very simply, I think, needs to be reminded of some of the complexity of the issue and the fact that the biblical witness itself is ambiguous. I read the 13th chapter of Paul, the 12th chapter in which Paul speaks about personal relationships, living peaceably with all. That paragraph in the 12th chapter which reflects very much Jesus in the Sermon on the Mount. But then the 13th chapter of Romans where Paul speaks about the structures of government and of authority, and claiming that governmental structures and those in authority are the servants of God and that they bear the sword. They bear the sword in order to ensure order. There are those who say that Paul and Luke in his writing of Acts were rather positive over against the Roman Empire, and were trying to convince the Roman Empire that the Jesus movement was not a subversive movement. And so maybe they tipped their hats to the empire. More so than Jesus would have, I don't know. But as a matter of fact, we have in the scripture, particularly as that which is embodied in Jesus, a magnificent picture of one who was able, who had the grace to let go of violence. It's such a huge subject, I didn't hardly know what little piece of it to tackle tonight, but I thought maybe I'd begin with this question. What affects change in our world? Think about that for a moment. What affects change? How is human behavior altered? In the international scene today, and as it has been forever and ever, when a government or a people is threatened and war ensues, although no one wins a war, somebody comes on top, and then a change can be effected by force. And history is replete, of course, with change reflected, affected by force. Revolutions are fought, and if they are won, changes are effected. Force can change behavior and can change a human condition. But force, if it's used coercively, will have to continue to be applied. Huh? If there's not been a change effected in mind and heart, then that force will have to continue to be at the ready, will have to continue to be enforced. And then nothing has really changed. You've stuffed the situation. You have brought things to an impasse. Nancy told me she saw Thomas Friedman, the journalist on the TV tonight, who said, we are going to have to go in, the United States is going to have to go in with its own personnel into Israel and police that situation in order to enforce. It's not going to be enough to have them expect to keep a ceasefire with the spiraling down of that condition. We're going to have to go in there, so says Thomas Friedman, and enforce that ceasefire. But once again, I can understand that. I can understand why he might say that. Maybe that will be necessary in order to create an impasse in this current violence. But isn't it true? If nothing changes, if no thinking changes, if no hearts are changed, if no spirits are altered, then that force removed will make the situation exposed once again to the same conflict. How is change affected? It's only affected from the inside out. It's only affected when the mind is changed, when people think differently. That's, of course, that's the secret, isn't it? And that's what Jesus seemed to be able to do. And that's what Jesus has continued to be able to do as the exemplar of that nonviolent resistance. Gandhi learned it from Jesus. Gandhi, the Hindu, acknowledged that he learned it from Jesus. And Gandhi was able to transform the subcontinent of India from a British colony to an independent nation. And if you remember the film, if you saw the film Gandhi, you'll remember that the Indians simply stood in the face of the fire of the British cannon. And there were those who were mowed down. But the cannon ceased because the British occupier could not continue that mass slaughter. Facing the guns, offering their bodies, they effectively silenced the guns. And if you think that it's as simple as that, then you have to remember that the guns were being manned by British people who were Western people, Christianized, for whom the ferment of the gospel had done its work over centuries, generations. What if Stalin had been behind the gun, or Hitler? Martin Luther King learned from Gandhi, who learned from Jesus. Martin Luther King was the point person of an effective movement in civil rights, which is still unfinished business, but was nonetheless effective in altering at least the legal situation in this nation. And in our own day, in this place, we've had Mel White with his Soul Force, who is trying to do the same thing, change the minds and the thinking of people, at least the legal basis for the treatment of gay lesbian folk. So I say, how is change affected? Change is affected when people begin to think differently. And the nonviolent resistance that Jesus modeled out has been effective in making significant changes. Sometimes I say here, you know, Jesus, he doesn't have a prayer. Jesus in Israel at the time of the Roman occupation, what kind of odds were those? And yet, on the other hand, when you stop to think about it, who has been more influential in changing the landscape of the world, in changing the thinking of the world, in changing the spirit and the ambience of the world? Who more than Jesus? Gandhi, Martin Luther King. So you see, to let go of violence is not to give up on effecting significant change in the world. And in fact, military power can save us from the invasion of an oppressor. But military power doesn't change any minds. It doesn't change any hearts. So, what are we going to do in our world, in our day, at this time? Could we at least acknowledge, while we keep our guns at the ready and our powder dry?
Could we at least acknowledge, while we pursue the cells of terror wherever they lie, that the anger that foments the creation of such cells is often stoked by our self-serving policies and our imperial posture in the world? And ought we not be candid enough to at least acknowledge the fact that simply to try to overpower the enemy will not work?
That it would only continue to breed the resentment and the hatred and the anger that erupts now and again in violence? Would we be willing to say that we who are by far the superior power in the world today are, through our policies in many respects, the fomenters of that resentment and that anger against us? Would we be willing to say that when our president puts an import tax on steel, that it's a bad economic move, but it's a political move in order to be reelected? And if our president takes a political move, which is a bad economic move, which is contrary to the kind of policy we are exporting globally, can we acknowledge that there's hypocrisy there? Could we acknowledge that when we strive for nuclear disarmament in this world, at the same time that we're talking about a new generation of nuclear weapons that are capable of targeting, and we list seven countries, one of which is China, could we come to see that we will have the ascendancy over China only for another couple of decades, two or three? Could we see that if we want to win this battle by continuing to stay on top politically, economically, militarily, can we see that the time is limited for that? Can we see that we cannot win that game ultimately? Do we understand that our children's children's children will be in the position that some of those nations who are angry and disillusioned with us today are in now? Could we at least, having admitted the complexity of our world, having acknowledged how difficult it is, how entwined are all of these things, could we at least come to see that we can't ultimately win any other way than through the way of Jesus? It's very difficult ever to make that happen here because our political system is bought and paid for. And those who can afford to buy it and to pay for it are the ones who want to maintain the status quo because it is simply to their advantage. But then would we not be better off to be somewhat crass and simply acknowledge, to publish, rather than high-flown rhetoric, would it not be better to publish to the world and to say honestly, we are going to stay on top as long as we can by whatever means we can? I think I wanted to close tonight by suggesting, after all of those wretched questions, I wanted to close tonight by saying, wherever you are on the spectrum, wherever you are, and good people will be at various points on that spectrum, but I wanted to say, wherever you are, visualize yourself in the presence of Jesus. Tell Jesus what you believe. Tell Jesus your strategy. Tell Jesus what you think would be the ideal scenario for this nation of ours. Tell Jesus. Look full in his wonderful face. Meet his eyes. I don't know of any other way significantly to affect change. And that's what this world needs, doesn't it? Think differently, so that we behave differently, so that there is a chance for humane community. Dear God, give us the grace to let go of violence.